Carl, as we continue here on Smith Sabatino, we have a wonderful guest who happens to be, and full disclosure here is very important,
yes,
a very close and old friend of mine. He was my boss for a number of years at WCBS Television in New York. His name is Steve Cohen. He's a highly regarded expert in media and media relations. He has a broad background in handling high-profile cases as a journalist and also as a crisis manager. He's appeared on a variety of television programs, the Today Show, The Factor, CNN, Morning, Dr. Phil, and so many others. He has operated as a senior news executive for many of the most prestigious and largest local newsrooms in the United States. And that's where I met him, of course, at WCBS. And he's been both director of news at WCBS in New York, KCBS in L.A., served as a vice president and general manager at WCAU-TV in Philadelphia. But without further ado, welcome, Steve Cohen. Thanks for joining us on the air.
It's great to hear your voice, Roland. And Carl, nice to make your acquaintance. I enjoyed your limerick, Raul. Obviously, you haven't stopped the good writing. It's great to hear it.
Well, you know, I have to say, Steve, you were the instrument to move me into a position of occasional commentary as a news broadcaster. Before you ever suggested that I do something one time, it was, you know, most of us in those days was everything was just straight and narrow,
right.
And you didn't form any opinions whatsoever. And one time, Carl, Steve said to me, he says, you know, it's been a tough week here in New York. He says, could you offer maybe a 15, 20-second, 30-second thought at the end of the newscast on Friday night? And that's how my commentary, my blog, and all the books that I have written began. So I thank you, Steve, for that.
I know. I hope that America feels the same as you and I do about it.
Yeah, me too. Listen, Steve, how would you characterize what's going on in the media today?
Well, I think that, as you and Carl have talked about, it's changed so much from our formative years when there was a spirit of compromise and life was not self-referential. It wasn't a time of selfies. It was a time of trying to be thoughtful and engage in ideas that would move American society forward. I've got a little bit of a theory, if you give me a minute to play it out. Would that be okay?
Sure, go ahead.
My theory is, and this revolves around Brian Williams, who also is someone who's been in my life, is I think that in another era, particularly after the World War II, there were a variety of elites that had spheres of influence, like Hollywood, politics, and journalists. And those spheres of influence existed on their own. Now, occasionally they would intersect, but generally they lived in their own world. So if you were Marilyn Monroe, you lived in one sphere of influence, and if you were Walter Winchell, you lived in another. It's not to say that Winchell didn't comment on Marilyn or Hopper, Hetty Hopper didn't comment on what was happening politically, but they really lived in separate spheres. And the reason that was important was that each of those spheres had their own ethics and their own situational ethics about their view of the truth, and only journalists were required to actually be truthful. Now, today, that's not the case. All those spheres of influence have basically blended together into sort of a conflagration of fame and celebrity. And I think that if you're Brian Williams, who started out, I think, as an inherently humble and wonderful guy, I still think he is fundamentally, that he got caught up in that. And there's a need to create sort of a personal mythology when you live in this world of one sphere of people who are famous and celebrities. And the result of that is that the ethics, the code that used to drive us as journalists gets lost to the other situational ethical codes. And the result is that journalism declines and becomes less likely to be a place for truth and universal truth and becomes more just another purveyor of thought. That's my theory about it. What do you guys think?
Well, you know, it's interesting. I mean, to me, ethics are sets of unenforceable values by which we choose to live. Mm-hmm. And they change. They change with circumstance. They change with knowledge. And they also change with events.
Steve, I have a thought about this. We discussed this a couple of weeks ago on the broadcast. And I believe, like the Brian Williams situation, it's getting caught up in the in what I define. You noted it earlier, the selfie world, that the amalgam of news as opposed to entertainment, as opposed to getting on a talk show and having a free format to discuss, can also be considered a trap. And if you don't regulate what you say and how you say it, you can get yourself into an awful lot of trouble. Not making a judgment as to whether Brian Williams' statements as to whether they were truthful or not. They get caught up in this environment, forgetting about the position that they're in and the position that they currently hold. Your thoughts?
I agree with both of you. I do think, though, that the essential ingredient of journalism, print or broadcast, is truth is truth. And I don't think that you can bargain on truth. I'm a believer in a sort of an Aristotelian sense that there is this thing called absolute truth about events. And it does seem to me that you live in a world now where, whether it's Fox News or MSNBC on the right and the left, and even CNN, who purports to be centrist, that there really isn't what Roland and I live with, which was a world where we were expected to be honest brokers of what was actually happening. What do you think of that, Ron?
I would agree. I would agree with that. To me, that, you know, truth is always true, but the saying of it differs, and that's what you're pointing out.
I think there are differences, but I think when you add in what I'm claiming to be this need for personal mythology, or everyone having a personal story that has to rise to being a celebrity status or fame worthy, and this isn't true just of journalists. My word, it's true of a 16-year-old girl in high school in Bay Ridge. I mean, she needs her own mythology as well. And the truth is that most of us live fairly regular lives without the great ups and downs and not overwhelmed by drama. But our society seems to want everyone to have this dramatic backdrop to our lives, which creates a disadvantage because it's not a truthful life. So you wind up with millions of people living lives online that are not based in truth. And then the expectation is that the people they see on television are living these same lives, and you get caught up in that. And the result is that it isn't that easy to find the ore that is gold anymore in a room full of coal.
Well,
and I think that's hard.
We create our lives as what we would like it to be in a theater of life rather than in the reality or the true aspects of what's truly going on.
Yes, and I think that if you're a novelist or a movie star, that's fine. But I don't think it's fine if you live in the world that I have for the last four decades of being a journalist, where you expect that what people say is going to be more true than not or closer to the truth than not. And that's your creed. That's why you hope that people will watch you or read you. And if you don't do that, I'm not sure whether we've so devalued how we engage in the discourse of this democracy that we haven't heard it in an irretrievable way.
You're still guiding a local news department, is that correct?
Right. I run an independent newsroom here in San Diego called KUSI-TV, and it's one of the few independents. It's owned and operated by a local family. It's affiliated with no network. We pretty much call it the way we see it. And it's one of the last places, honestly, where I get to still do the kind of journalism that I want to do, which is why I'm still in it. These other places would not be places where I could paint the canvas that I, the landscape I want to paint on the canvas
Well,
of the community.
The opportunity to be at a station like that. I'll tell you what. Why don't we get Roland and I to come out to visit you, and we'll
especially
do it
now, especially this week when it's probably 30 below where you are.
We'll do a live broadcast from San Diego from your station. I'd love to do it. I'll accept the invitation anytime.
Well, I didn't hear the direct invitation.
I will accept it.
You have a tendency to call for that. Steve, if you can, I mean, in terms of your timing, can you hold with us while we do a commercial break and then come back for another segment?
I would really like to do that. I'll hold on for you.
Yeah, same here. Very much so. Thank you.
Yes, that's fascinating. And Steve is going to stay with us as we go pay the bills.
What? Wait a minute.
Well, Roland, write us a check, Roland.
I thought you were paying the bills, and you thought I was paying the bills. So we've got to work this thing out. You know what? Steve will take care of it. We'll let him pay.
All right, call 1700 with Roland Smith. This is Smith 1700 on America Weekend on the Envision Radio Network. If you please, do stay with us.
Think Green. Harrison with you. Did you know over 90% of American households use paper towels? What does that mean? Turns out over 3,000 tons of paper towels go into the trash every day. 3,000 tons of anything heading to landfill daily is amazing enough, but when it's something as airy and light as a paper towel, it's especially hard-hitting. Now add all the other items from your garbage can on top. Funny, we're taught the Great Wall of China is the largest man-made structure in the world. But no more. The largest man-made structure is now a landfill site called Fresh Kills that New York City's been using for 50 years. It's almost 5 square miles in size, and so much garbage was dumped there that at its peak, the dump was 80 feet higher than the Statue of Liberty. Getting rid of paper towels will reduce 4 million cubic feet of landfill and prevent 864,000 trees from being cut down.
Think Green with Harrison at thinkgreenradio.com.
Where are they now with Ahmad Rashad?
This Hall of Famer is sixth all-time in NHL goals. He scored at least 30 goals in 17 of his 19 NHL seasons. He's a 7-time All-Star and the 1993 All-Star Game MVP.
Gets around, Bodger gets around May, and he scores! What a goal! Mike Gartner!
So, where is Mike Gartner now? Mike continued to play the game he loves. He was on the ice for the Rangers Flyers alumni game on New Year's Eve 2011. Mike works as an instructor at the Hockey Ministry's Christian Hockey Camps, and he spends his free time out on the many lakes of Canada, reeling in big fish, always practicing catch and release.
Well, it's nice that there's that recognition because sometimes you feel compelled to keep a fish that size.
Mike Gardner, still putting him in the net. I'm Ahmad Rashad.